Mr. Hacker.
Yes?
Can I talk to you for a minute?
Oh, well, sure. Come along. I'm kind of in a hurry, though.
It's about this cooperative scheme you're spreading around, Mr. Hacker.
Scheme?
Well, this idea, then. Mr. Hacker, I represent the biggest creamery in these parts. And frankly, sir, my company isn't too happy about what you're doing here.
They're not.
No, they're not. You know as well as I do that if these farmers around here form a cooperative, or whatever you call it, it's going to hurt our business.
How much does your company pay a farmer for 100 pounds of cream?
30 cents, sometimes 35. Why?
35 cents. And how much do you sell your butter for?
Well, I hardly think that's any of your business.
You'd be surprised how much it's my business, and every one of these farmers' business. I happen to know that your creamery sells butter at 24 cents a pound, of which the farmer receives about 10. That means you're taking over a 100% profit out of that pound of butter.
Are you trying to tell me that there's anything wrong with making profits?
Certainly not. But I'll tell you this. When a company like yours buys at one price and sells at one as high above cost as you do, that's exploitation.
Are you accusing us of...
Stating bald fact, mister. What this community here needs is a better break for the farmer. If you're not willing to pay him a fair price and there's no other creamery around here that's willing... Then he's justified into going into the business of butter making himself.
Why, that's ridiculous. What do these farmers know about making butter? Or selling it? Why, they'll go broke in 6 months. Cooperative. I never yet saw three farmers agree on anything.
Well, keep your eyes open then, mister. Because I think you're gonna see some farmers agreeing on something. And since I seem to be giving free advice away in all directions today, let me pass you a word. The handwriting's on the wall, mister. If you don't see it and start treating the farmer like a human being, maybe it's you that won't last 6 months.
I tell you, boys, this proposal is nothing but a scheme cooked up by a lot of long-haired radicals and foreigners. Now you farmers know better than to go off on some half-cocked idea dreamed up by an ivory tower professor. We've always tried to give you good prices. And we'll raise our prices if you'll stick with us and keep out of these cooperatives.
I don't know, Fanny. Looks like I've been beating my head against a stone wall.
Oh, but Theo, you haven't given them time yet.
Oh, time enough. When I talked with them this summer, I thought they took to the idea of cooperation. But maybe that fellow was right. Maybe farmers won't work together.
Now, Theo, don't get all upset.
The fella talks himself half to death and runs around the state like a chicken with its head cut off, and what happens?
But...
Nothing.
Well, I'll get it.
I should have stuck to teaching. Let a man go out who could convince people.
Theo?
Yes, Fanny. Who was it?
It's a letter, Theo.
Well, let's see. Fanny, it's a letter from a man who wants to set up a cooperative.
And that was the beginning, the start of a flood of requests for information, details, encouragement from the man who had started people thinking about this new idea. First one letter, then a dozen, and then...
Look at that pile of letters. Why, you'll never get these answers.
I believe you, Fanny. Well, we say, I'll tell you what.
What?
Suppose I write up a pamphlet with all the information right in one place.
Oh, Theo, do you think a farmer would read an old university bulletin?
Oh, they will this one, Fanny. By George, this pamphlet will be written for the farmer to read, not the professor.
Yes, that pamphlet was called simply Organizing Cooperative Creameries. How well the farmers liked what it had to say and how it said it was demonstrated through the next 10 years by the organization of over 500 cooperative creameries in Minnesota. The logjam that had held back the energies of Minnesota's thousands of dairy farmers had been broken by one man. Now the farmer was working for himself. He was beginning to think about improving his cattle, his cream, and his butter. At the dairy school in St. Paul, he could attend Hacker's new winter course for butter makers. And soon, Minnesota was winning an established market. Hacker-trained butter makers were winning international prizes for butter quality. And back at University Farm, the man who had begun it all continued to work quietly through the years with his cattle.
Oh, here she is, Fanny, born last night. Oh, isn't she a beauty?
Oh, isn't she? One of the prettiest little calves I've ever seen.
Oh, she sure is. Here now.
Theo.
What's that, Fanny?
When are you going to start thinking about retiring?
Retiring? Why, I've got work to do, Fanny.
But don't you think you've done enough already? What work do you have to do?
Well, I have to feed my cows, Fanny. This little calf here ought to keep me occupied for a few more years. No, when my work's done, Fanny, then you can talk to me about retiring. Here now, Gertrude, here.
Yes, through the years of growing acclaim, matching the success of the cooperative movement he had stimulated in Minnesota, T.L. Hacker continued to feed his cows, to keep his records, to test and to classify. And finally, simply, in 1913, another little pamphlet appeared. Another plain, easy-to-read bulletin. But with such a tremendous impact on the dairy industry that Hacker's name was heard around the world.
Feeding the dairy cow. 3 pounds of Timothy will produce... Say, Mary! Mary, this is wonderful. It tells you just how much feed, if any kind, will give you the most butter fat. But if it's this Hacker man that wrote it, you can bet it's the thing to use, too.
And the feeding standard recommended was the thing to use. Now the men who had banded together under his leadership had the Hacker feeding standard to raise the butterfat production of their cows. Haphazard feeding was abandoned. Butter production shot upward. Private creameries and cooperatives joined to boost Minnesota to third place, second, and finally first in production of butter in the nation. Grateful dairymen and educators heaped honors on the quiet Wisconsin dairy farmer who had given Minnesota so much. But to all their praises, T.L. Hacker answered one thing.
Boys, it's the dairy cow. Treat her right and treat her gently. She'll always come through for you. Because she's a lady. Yes, sir. She's a lady.
And so ends our story of Theodore Hacker, one of Minnesota's great pioneers. Few men did more for Minnesota than this quiet, unassuming man who fathered the modern Minnesota dairy industry and brought to the Minnesota farmer the gospel of agricultural cooperation. Today, the Hacker feeding standard is used by dairy farmers throughout the world. Minnesota is the ranking butter producer of the nation, and producing 3/4 of all Minnesota butter are 548 active cooperative creameries. One of these many successfully operating associations is the one which Hacker used as an example for the dairy farmers of Minnesota to follow. In Clark's Grove, a little village a few miles north of Albert Lea, stands a trim brick building equipped with the latest in butter-making equipment. Here on the site of the small wooden creamery, which Hacker founded in 1892, the sons of the original patrons are carrying on the work their fathers began. Perhaps here can most fittingly be told the story behind the modern Minnesota cooperative. By tape recording from Clark's Grove, then, here's the story of one cooperative told by the patrons themselves. Lewis E. Larson, secretary of the governing board, begins.
The Clark's Grove Creamery was organized in February 1890 by a group of 80 farmers who elected a committee of 9 to solicit the farmers to see how many were interested in delivering cream. There were 80 farmers signed up. The first month of operation, they received 275,000 pounds of milk, for which the farmers received 35 cents a hundred. Our net worth today is about 65,000 after 58 years of operation.
One of the oldest patrons of Clark's Grove is Ole Jensen, who all his long life has kept the precepts laid down by a leader of the first cooperators at Clark's Grove.
I remember all the details, but I remember one thing which I bear in mind, especially our president, J.P. Larson, brought at the one meeting. He said, we all expect to have blue ribbon butter. But he says we must remember to give or furnish blue ribbon cream. And that's what the cooperative plan was to bring good quality of butter.
Yes, as with any successful creamery, one reason for the prosperity of such small cooperatives as Clark's Grove has been quality. Good stock and feeding, good cream and fine butter. And another reason, an all-important one, is well stated by Lyle Stevens of Clark's Grove.
Well, I believe the success with cooperative is management. That's true with any business. Naturally, that we're all interested in securing as high a price as possible. And through cooperatives, why we succeed in receiving that price.
Of course, the primary aim of good management is to market the product at the best possible price. In a creamery, this means, first of all, quality cream and finally, quality butter. No creamery can survive without the services of a good butter maker. But as Alfred Camp, operator and manager of Clark's Grove, points out, the decisions on policy of a co-op are made by the patrons themselves. For example, why does Clark's Grove concentrate on butter production?
Well, we just manufacture butter here, and all of our products goes to the eastern market. The majority of it goes to Atlantic City for hotel trade. And during the war, there was several number of the patrons here felt like they wanted to sell milk, but the majority of them felt the other way. They felt by putting the skim milk back to the farm animals, why it is more productive for them. And in that way, we have never gone into the whole milk business here.
Yes, the success of the modern Minnesota cooperative depends squarely on the producer, the dairy farmer. Good cream and good judgment, those are two of the contributions of the dairy farmer to his co-op. And as President J.C. Jensen of the association points out, there is a third. Each member of a cooperative must have the right spirit.
The only thing that is needed in building a cooperative organization is to have a group of cooperative-minded people. There is, of course, a responsibility belonging to each and every one of the cooperative members, and that responsibility is to talk cooperative to his fellow man. There are, of course, few who says that cooperative organizations are just a group of people who are trying to work something up for themselves and just for a small group. But of course, that's not the cooperative-minded man that says that. He knows that the cooperative organizations is for all people and not just for very few.
Yes, today the spirit of the first cooperators and of their great champion, Theodore Hacker, is stronger than ever in Clark's Grove and the hundreds of other Minnesota cooperatives. And the principles which Hacker fought for and established today guide the Minnesota farmer and the Minnesota dairyman, whether they be cooperators or not, toward even higher achievements in quality production and fair dealing. You have just heard The Crusader, another in the series Tales of Minnesota. Mark Spink played the part of T.L. Hacker, Alice Rice played Fanny Hacker, and Roger Erickson was Hans Peter Jensen. The narrators were Roy Norquist and Bob Boyle. The console technicians were Bob Warren and Dolores Scheinblum. These and others in the cast are members of the University of Minnesota Radio Guild. Engineers were John Allman and Lawrence Larson, your announcer, Ray Christensen. Tape recordings heard on the broadcast were made through the courtesy of the Governing Board of Clark's Grove. The Tales of Minnesota are written by William Connell, produced by Northrop Dawson, Jr., and presented by the Minnesota University of the Air in cooperation with the station to which you are now listening.